Welcome back to the Roundtable on a rainy Wednesday morning. 9:13 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, joined today by Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Well, hello, Uncle Ray.
Nice to have you
Keep
here.
Keep it real.
Libby Post is here. Hi, Libby.
Hi, Ray. Love to see you.
Nice to have you here. And Judy Patrick, who is here. Oh, on occasion.
Yay!
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
Right?
Very exciting that you can move your meeting schedule around and be with us today. So it's always good. And usually we've been starting the program the last couple of weeks with, you know, Ebola. And today I want to take a minute or two and talk about, I don't know if you saw the footage last night or today. NASA and officials from a commercial rocket company are searching for debris and answers following the explosion of a rocket and cargo module that were to deliver supplies to astronauts on the International Space Station. And this happened dinner time yesterday at Wallops Island, Virginia. There is a flight facility there, and the rocket took off 8 or 9 seconds later back to the ground, and a massive explosion, which was witnessed miles and miles away, and people basically were watching it from the shore, and they could feel the shockwave from this. Rockets explode. This was an unmanned rocket. Nobody was hurt.
Yeah.
However, the bigger question here is, now this was a commercial endeavor.
Yeah.
Supplying the International Space Station. This obviously would appear to be the wave of the future. Commercial launches.
Well, NASA was paying them. It wasn't like it was...
They were subcontracting.
Right, right. But it wasn't like, you know, they said, oh, you know, we're going to do this and charge lots of people to go on and go to the space station with us. It was a contract. It was a government contract.
Correct. And my question for the panel to start the show is this a proper way for governmental space launches to go as we move forward?
Well, if you're trying to balance the budget, Raymond, as many of us believe in doing, then you'd look for ways, you know, for people to do this kind of thing. I mean, what I'm astounded by is how little publicity this is getting. In other words, if it was earlier in the game, you would have had people holding their heads and shaking their heads, and you know, this kind of stuff happens, and so I'm sort of shocked by that.
You know, one of the things I always wonder about when I hear these stories, government does so much contracting out of services, from snow plowing to launching rockets. And, you know, why is it always cheaper for the private sector to do it? And unions will say that they're not doing as good a job. People in favor of this will say there are efficiencies built into the private sector business. But something we should all consider as we think about this scenario.
I agree with you. I think this idea that subcontracting everything out to the private sector is going to be somehow cheaper, I don't necessarily believe that that's true, because there has to be a profit margin factored into all this to make it worthwhile for them to do it. And I'm sure they factored into their costs, well, what happens if something blows up?
There was insurance.
You know, there's all of that.
Insurance,
so,
we pronounce it insurance.
Insurance.
You know, so... there's a lot of outsourcing these days, and part of it is for a smoke and mirrors. Look, we're saving money, but in the long run, it's still going to cost us.
Well, it's also a matter of, you know, far be it from me to claim any kind of expertise in this, but it's also a matter of upfront money. In other words, you may be right that in the long run, you know, you don't really save anything, but somebody's got to put that money up, build the rocket, say, we can do this, and advance the money. And that's why the government has an advantage when it comes to budget balancing, BB, budget balancing. Mm-hmm.
Orbital Sciences Corporation out of Virginia built this Antares rocket, or at least owned the rocket.
Yeah.
Interesting. And this isn't crossing the news wires now. By the way, the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, if you want to weigh in. Interesting. Last night when this happened, I think it was 6:30, 6:40, initial reports throughout the early evening were that there was a classified payload on this flight.
Ooh.
In addition, now, I have not seen this in any newscasts or news reports this morning, whether it was scrubbed or whether they have different information, I'm not sure. But if, in fact, there was a substantial classified payload, one would assume it would be a research satellite. There were some 32 mini research satellites on board this for scientific purposes. Is then the government really taking a gamble in putting this in commercial hands if there is, in fact, a classified payload on this?
Well, you know, the thing is that you take a risk once you hit that button, whether it's the government launching it or a private sector launching it, something can go wrong. You know, I don't think it really, really matters one way or the other because there's inherent risk in all of this. Rocket science is complicated, as we all know. And
certainly more complicated.
It is rocket science, and it's complicated, and things happen. There doesn't seem to be any sense that this was a terrorist act or anything like that. Nobody's saying anything like that. This sort of stuff happens because it's complicated and something went wrong. You know, we're not wringing our hands because people think, oh, well, it was the private sector. They lost the money and no one was killed.
Yeah. I think Ray may have been implying that these satellites are being used for, quote, security reasons of one kind or another, that we may be looking in on China, we may be looking in on Afghanistan.
Yeah, but we're doing that anyway.
Yeah, and then the question is, to what end, and is it working?
And this morning, all we're hearing about is there was food for the space station astronauts and maybe some pea-growing experiments from school. But then the other thing they're telling you is, you find anything in your field or in your lawn,
don't touch it. For God's sake, don't touch it.
It could be really hot.
That's funny.
Yeah, so we shall see about that, but I did want to bring that up. My son and I were watching the replay this morning on the cable news, and he said, you know, I know it's terrible that he's 12. Rockets explode, but explosions are cool. And the footage really is, it's unbelievable. And to see somebody holding their iPhone and taking footage from the shore miles away, it was like a nuclear blast going off. It's a lot of rockets.
And maybe there was.
No. But maybe there was some nuclear components.
And what Judy just said, don't pick up anything hot.
It could be very hot.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. There has been some political motion and some news regarding, yes, Ebola. And we'll take a quick break and be back, and we'll discuss that once again.
Support for WAMC comes from Spirit House Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world, wine tastings Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Williamstown Film Festival, November 5th through 9th, movies, parties, and guest artists, including Lily Taylor, Nick Flynn, and the Bourne Legacy's Tony Gilroy, WilliamstownFilmFest.com for schedule and tickets. And Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons, treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties, HVFA.com.
The Roundtable on WAMC. Wednesday morning, 9:21 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, and Libby Post with us. The email address, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, anything in the mailbag?
Well, there is. It's Eric checks in, and you know what he says?
No.
Neither do I.
Okay.
Okay. Eric says, every day cars and trucks crash. That's from Eric.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, he's right.
Okay, and then Joe, our favorite Joe, says, Alan et Alia. Don't you like that?
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Okay, the private sector can do things cheaper because they cash in on government-funded R&D. Classified cargo, of course. What isn't classified? A study on the overclassification of documents was classified. That's from Joe.
Wow. Very clever. Anything else?
No.
Nope.
Take that as a no. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. President Obama says the monitoring of U.S. health workers returning home from the Ebola fight in West Africa must be prudent and based on science. Obama did not directly criticize mandatory quarantine policies in states like New York and New Jersey, but said healthcare workers should not be discouraged from going to the front lines. He also said not making a robust international response in West Africa endangers Americans. Meanwhile, state health officials in Maine said yesterday that if health workers returning from West Africa's Ebola hotspots refuse to cooperate with that state's voluntary quarantine, they'll have to legally enforce it. The nurse from Maine, who's in isolation after treating Ebola patients in West Africa, says she is prepared to go to court if the state tries to quarantine her. Casey Hickok spoke on some of the morning shows today, Today and Good Morning America from Fort Kent. She says she's had no contact with anyone and will have no contact today, but says if the restrictions aren't lifted by tomorrow, she'll go to court to fight for her freedom. She says the quarantine policies are not scientifically or constitutionally just, Alan.
Well, you know, we did a Vox Pop yesterday.
That was a good one. That was a good one.
It was, and we got a lot of calls. And absolutely more than half were for some kind of serious quarantine process, saying that, hey, you know, when people go abroad, they know where they're going. They know what they're going to face when they come back because of the seriousness of this. There are people who are warning of really dire consequences here if this thing takes off. And we don't really know. Now, somebody, we just had another one on another subject, will say, why don't you get somebody on the panel who knows what they're talking about? The answer is nobody really knows here. As I said yesterday,
where's the Ebola czar?
Yeah, well, there's that big thing about where's the Ebola czar, but he may be in his office figuring it all out.
Well, you know, he was the head of debate prep in the 2012 election. I'm not sure that this really translates, yeah. But that's who he was, Kane, or whatever his name is.
Well, in any case, I think a lot of Americans truly believe it is the right thing to do to quarantine. I know that yesterday morning when we added it up, when Joe added it up, it was sort of half and half. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a certain kind of logic about if you come back, you know, you really have to be prepared. You know, when the Queen of England visited the United States, they put her dogs in quarantine. As you probably remember, the corgis couldn't be out because we don't allow foreign dogs into the United States from England. Other places, maybe, but England, no. Don't you see?
No.
Thank you for saying that, Libby.
No, but...
But, you know, we're seeing the same kind of reaction on Daily Gazette polls or even on our Facebook page. Whenever we raise this issue, you get a really strong reaction from the public that, especially in support of quarantine, they're afraid, they're concerned, and I think they don't have enough information at this point.
You know... Speaking of the Gazette, you had a fascinating piece in mm-hmm. there on a local angle, and we had one on WAMC.org from Pat Bradley, who says Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin says a Vermont man is in voluntary quarantine after his return from West Africa, where he was visiting countries that are fighting the Ebola epidemic. And in Schenectady, one voluntary quarantine just ended.
Right. This is really fascinating. Apparently, it happened 3 weeks ago, the week of September 29th. This was a West African family, and they were monitored for symptoms of Ebola for 3 weeks after arriving in the county from West Africa. They voluntarily quarantined themselves, and apparently, the county health department was notified by the state health department, and they worked with the CDC to develop this plan after, the county was notified that they were arriving. You know, there are a lot of questions on this story. Like, how did they know? How many other families in how many other counties are out there that this
under
happened
the radar.
To?
Yeah.
Yeah, this totally flew under the radar. Families not being identified. It's not any indication they had any contact with anybody with Ebola. How risky this was at all. But this happened, and again, it was a surprise to us in the newsroom last night.
I have to say that I thought the story really showed the ability to do this issue, to deal with this issue, deal with it well, with a lack of hysteria, and maintaining the family's confidentiality, which I think is key here, because we have those crazies who want a quarantine. And, you know, if some of those folks, if they knew who this family were, would probably go to their house and do something a little bit rash. So I'm happy to see that the local health department, the county health department, was able to maintain the confidentiality, as they should. And now this family can go about their business. And it's great. It showed that the system can work if we know who these folks are.
But were they? But one of the questions and that needs to be asked is how voluntarily were they? Did they make this decision? You know, were they kind of coerced to do
Strongly suggested that.
So,
well, you're never going to know because you're not going to be able to talk to them
unless they come forward.
It's funny that you mentioned, Libby, the lack of hysteria involved Judy, you know, as the editor of this paper, had you found out earlier, is that a front page right away?
It was front page this morning.
No, but I mean, had you found out while it was going on?
The issue about whether or not they were going to be quarantined is a public issue, so that would have been an issue we would have pursued,
okay,
definitely.
Sure.
So do we as the media then fan the hysteria, Libby?
Just a little bit.
But we don't chase every person that comes back from West Africa. That is the key,
yeah,
I think.
I think this is a great public policy issue as defined by yesterday's Vox Pop. And yesterday morning's program, people really want to hear about this. We got more phone calls yesterday on this subject than any other thing we have ever done.
Really?
Here. Yes.
Well, it's important for people to be
educated. We have five phones
here.
During Vox Pop yesterday, all five phones just lit up. They just lit up, and they just stayed lit up. Everybody has a feeling about this thing. And we heard from a lot of medical professionals saying that they're medical professionals, and they were for the quarantine. Interestingly.
That is interesting.
And I think one caller said, well, this nurse is being, to some extent, selfish by just not voluntarily saying, hey, listen, I'll stay out of harm's way for 21 days. Or maybe that was a letter to the roundtable yesterday.
But, you know, there are people who are going to be out there, and they're going to be worried about their children, and they're going to be worried about their lives, and they do not want this to happen. There are terrible things happening here. In addition, you've got African kids who live in a particular place in the Bronx.
Who are being called Ebola.
Yeah, right.
I saw that.
I mean, well, not only that, you know, but it can get worse than that.
Right. There's lots of parallels to be made to the AIDS epidemic.
All right, let's pick this up. I want to mention Australia's reaction to this and the U.S. military. We'll pick it up briefly after the news. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We have some more mail to read. We have some more topics to cover. Not all Ebola. So if you're sick of it, just hang in there. We'll get to more. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:36 is the time. It's our Roundtable panel. Libby Post, Judy Patrick, and Alan Chartok. Yours truly, Ray Graff, here in for Joe Donahue. Alan, the email bag once again swelling with Ebola things.
I want to remind everybody, keep it short. Ike said, you know, that'd be President Eisenhower for you who were born, you know, later in life. So you can put it in a paragraph. He wouldn't let his generals hand him anything that wasn't in a paragraph.
All right.
So let's not get...
Give us the Cliff's Notes version.
So here's Michael, who says, so the fact that it was a 50-50 split in your mail on quarantine reflects only emotion and politics, not facts, not science, not reality. That's all I'm going to read in this letter. Okay. A wrote, medical professionals are not immune from emotional reactions that ignore science. I work in healthcare and have many colleagues who refuse to get a flu vaccine, risking patient lives. Okay. And then John says, I disagree with Judy, who said the problem is the public doesn't have enough information about Ebola. Anyone who has turned on a newscast has heard by now that Ebola is only contagious when symptoms are present and only contractible by intimate contact with bodily fluids and the rest. The problem is the public doesn't believe it. We are accustomed to being lied to by government, media, corporations, etc. This is an issue of public trust, says John. And Ryan says, this reminds me so much of the people who overuse hand sanitizer. I'm not concerned about Ebola at all. And I think while it's important to protect the American people, the reality is sometimes life happens. Disease is part of life, and we should fight it. But people go nuts. Remember swine flu?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Remember swine flu?
Sure.
Okay. And then... Rich says, elected officials do not know what is best. Neither does the private sector. There has to be a meeting of the minds. Donald Trump was able to lead the fixing of New York City's Wollman ice skating rink.
Ah.
Wernher von Braun had many rocket launching failures in America before success. Yet failure still occurs. It is very expensive regardless. Let's see here. then I'm, for all of you who, you know, following along with me, I'm trying to.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just
well, the email
to,
address is roundtable@wmc.org. I'll buy you a minute here, Alan. Roundtable@wmc.org.
You're vamping till ready.
In the key of E.
E, but you're vamped till ready.
Right, you are.
Okay. And then Brian, his letter is not being read because he's not civil.
I see.
Civility has a line, and right. I'm telling you that right now, Brian, so cut it out.
Well, thanks for mentioning it.
Okay, and let's see here. And from Rocket, let's not forget that even government-operated as opposed to outsourced space launch projects have exploded in the past
you
as
bet.
Well.
You bet.
And that's from Mike. And then, I think we said something like that. And then, let's see, Christine, did we read the, is anyone aware that the nurse in Maine is a verifiable CDC employee? Why is this not being mentioned? Also, the last time she treated an Ebola patient was on the 21st. Just wondering if that is also correct.
Don't know.
Don't know. Okay.
Well, at what point does the level of the illness, and I believe there is one person now in the country who has it, be highly outweighed by the possible hysteria in the public? And so is it not the role of government to some extent to try to allay those fears? And if this is one way to do it, could that be the reasoning behind this? In other words, hysteria, a mass, you know, people digging bunkers in their backyard or a raid on the grocery stores or whatever, isn't that worse than what we have here, which is one person who has the thing?
You know, this is what people forget what happened when AIDS became an epidemic here in this country. You had to have very intimate contact with someone to be able to get to be infected with the HIV.
But we didn't know.
Right. But even when we did know, and even when we did educate people, people were still being hysterical about it. And Ryan White was kept out of his classroom, and people were beaten up and victimized because they may have been HIV positive, not even if they really were. And that's why I'm glad this family in Schenectady County, their anonymity was kept, because who knows what could happen? But it was the same thing. Education was going out there. People were talking about this. We were educating people about it. And it took a while for people to get a grip and recognize that this was not a disease that you could easily get. And it's the same with Ebola.
Maybe there's a lack of trust here, because in the early days of the AIDS epidemic, there was some uncertainty by health professionals about exactly what was going on and how it was being transmitted. And maybe there's some lingering memories of that among the public, who say maybe they don't always know exactly what they're talking about. It seemed clear in this case that they do, but the public can remain skeptical.
I think that's a brilliant point. And I think you can go further than that, back 40, 50, 60 years, a general distrust of government and what the government says. And perhaps that's at play here as well.
Great. And so where do we go with that? What do we do? We're all going to distrust the government, so we're all just going to go running out into the street and be
that's
hysterical all the time? I mean, it's absurd. You can't get Ebola unless you come into contact with bodily fluids. There is one person in the United States who is actively sick at this point, and he's gone from being serious to stable. So let's deal with the fact that we have one person. We are dealing with people who are coming into the country. We're trying to do these voluntary quarantines, but let's not be hysterical about this. Let's be rational.
Australia has closed the borders to citizens of the countries worst hit by the West African Ebola outbreak. Those states said stigmatize healthy people and makes it harder to fight the disease. The U.S. military.
Well, that's a very important point what you're about to bring up.
The U.S. military also has instituted an involuntary quarantine period.
So I don't get it. So in other words, if the President of the United States is saying through his military that you have to mandatorily quarantine yourself, then why is it okay for the military but not for everybody else? I don't get that part.
That's an argument that some people are making at this point. Others would argue that the military is in the business of ordering around their soldiers, and
the soldiers are in the business of taking orders.
Right. No, less so.
You guys keep doing this to me, and I resent it.
Okay, making points?
No. I mean, yes, they have to take orders, But somebody is telling them to take orders for a reason. It's based on a rationale, which is you've been over there, you've been helping Ebola patients. That's why we sent you there. And now when you come back, mandatory isolation. Now, forget about being ordered to or having to take orders. It is the question of the science of telling them to be quarantined. That is the question I'm asking. So, you know, you guys who are cheap shot artists who keep doing this.
Why is Judy a cheap shot artist?
Well,
for bringing that up?
Because she is.
So the Pentagon has a different set of doctors apparently than
like
the
what?
CDC. Yeah, that it's, is.
You
that
still
is
either get the disease or you don't.
The Pentagon protocol apparently is different than the
right.
CDC's, and you would think that this, I guess the CDC can't order the Pentagon around.
There aren't exactly the same civil liberties issues when you're in the military.
Well, you keep making that point.
Well, that is the point.
What you want to know is, why is the Army doing this and the CDC isn't doing it for civilians?
Yes.
And that's a really good question, and and I can't answer that question, but it's a really good question, and, you know, it's a question for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and it's a question for Chuck Hagel to figure out to come out with a rational explanation for this, other than we can.
That certainly doesn't calm the hysteria
among
the public.
Yeah, and people have Bonnie Rhodes said the nurse must have been told of the New York doctor's story by now, since she's so sure that it won't happen to her. If it does, will she be liable to civic prosecution? I guess it meant civil. I'm assuming she'd survive given her health and our level of care here, and that's from Bonnie.
Okay,
and like that.
The email address, roundtable@wamc.org. What do you say we stop talking about Ebola for the morning?
Okay, that's enough.
Good about that? All right, Hopper, let's take a quick break, and then we shift gears.
Support for WAMC comes from Adirondack Creamery Ice Cream. Crafted with local milk, cream, sugar, and eggs, and no artificial additives, flavors such as pumpkin pie and banana chip available at Adams Ferriker Farms, Whole Foods, and other specialty grocers. AdirondackCreamery.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com. And Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady, a dental practice with private parking located across the street from Union College, PadulaDDS.com.
Rainy Day bumper music from Dave Hopper. It is 9:46.
Right.
It is the roundtable. It is the roundtable panel. It is Libby Post, Judy Patrick, and Alan Shartok, and Ray Graff, and you at roundtable@wamc.org. All right, we won't mention Ebola anymore.
So don't mention
it. I just did. What? All right, this is from CNN. Poll, Americans grim on economy ahead of midterms. Americans' view of the economy is increasingly dour, though a majority expect things to turn around next year, a new poll shows. Just 38% of Americans believe the economy is in good shape. A CNN ORC international poll of 1,018 adults conducted found that's down from 42% in September, and it could hurt Democrats' chances of holding on to the Senate in the November 4th midterm elections.
It will.
To your credit, or perhaps if you're wrong, to your discredit, you have been saying for a long time that the Republicans Republicans have a real shot of taking the Senate. Where do you stand today, Alan Shartok?
No, I think they have a very good shot. If you put a gun to my head and you said you have to tell us what's going to happen in your best thinking, the Republicans are going to take the Senate.
Can you give me a basic primer on how this works? Why does people feeling badly about the economy, why is that bad for Democrats?
That's a great point.
Well, we do know that if you take a look at by-elections, in other words, non-presidential years, and congressional elections, we do know that the party in power always loses a lot of power. But then there's just plain old lying. For example, this morning, I watched Mitt Romney, of all people, at least it looked like Mitt Romney on Morning Joe. And I was on the bike, so I was preoccupied. Okay. But I could swear he was saying George Bush had really solved the economic dilemma by the time that Obama had taken office. That's just a lie.
Are you sure he said that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
Sure, it wasn't the rifleman?
It was not the rifleman. Okay.
There's a couple things here. I'd like to know what the question was that they asked. That's number one, that they are now basing this poll results on. And we don't get to see the questions per se. But
well, you know, sometimes you do.
Yeah, but we aren't here.
Yeah.
And the other thing is what Alan said is absolutely right. They are creating their own set of reality that people are
buying
into.
Their own narrative.
Because you have said a number of times the middle class either votes up or they vote down in terms of their interests.
That's
they either
right.
vote with the upper class interests of what they want, or they feel bad for the people who don't have. And right now, the narrative is
no. It's not that they feel bad for the people at the bottom. It's that they associate with the people at the bottom. That's the beauty of it.
And the fact of the matter is, they do associate with the people on the bottom, but they are still voting for the upper class. For whatever reason,
for the same reason that they play the lottery with no chance of winning.
Right, it's dollar and a dream. But it's this narrative that's been put out there over and over and over again, where history will prove that Obama was one of the best presidents for the economy. The economy has turned around. Look at your portfolio, folks. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not past 17,000 right now.
It will be.
It's growing. People need to recognize that, you know, what is going on here is the Republican narrative is determining a lot of the media coverage.
Well, sure, you say it. It's propaganda.
Right.
Goebbels 101. You say it. And sooner or later, people believe that it's so.
Interesting. Continuing in the CNN article here, the economy isn't the only measure of the country's mood ahead of next week's elections. A CNN ORC international poll released Tuesday found that 68% of Americans say they're angry about the way things are going in the United States.
Well, that's partially because the rich are still getting richer.
Yeah.
And the people who, you know, have to make a living are not seeing great increases. Now, the president and others talk about an increase in the minimum wage, for example. And the same Republicans who understand that the Democrats are vulnerable here, the last thing they're going to do is to say, it's okay, we're going to raise everybody's standard of living. We're going to raise everybody's the money that they're making. That is pure politics, and it's unfortunate.
I wonder what the other choices were in this poll.
Were
they happy? Were they? Yeah. Did they even know? I'm surprised anybody had an opinion about this at all. I mean, are we talking about the government? Are we talking about the weather? It's such an amorphous question.
Well, here's one that is fairly cut and dried and perhaps speaks to what Alan's prediction or near prediction is about the Senate.
No, it's a prediction.
Okay. Also showed.
But my father said, never, ever take a position against your own basic interest.
Okay.
So I feel a little guilty here.
Well, you're just analyzing. And this is from CNN. It also showed that 36% of Republicans are enthusiastic about voting this year, while just 26% of Democrats are. Now, there are some regional races that are, on the face of it, extremely close. And does that play into, say, the Kachik-Amador race?
Yes.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
For those of you who are in Massachusetts or Vermont or Connecticut, the Kachik-Amador race is a local state Senate race here.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm more interested in that race, Ray, in which Kachik is behind Amador.
And she won by 18 or 19 votes last time.
18 votes. But that district was designed by the Republicans in the usual stuff where they,
proposition we're going to vote on is speaking just about to that in New York.
If I lived in New York, I'd certainly vote no on that one.
But I am voting no too.
But what can I tell you?
Yeah.
Because it's a lousy.
But
I'm much more interested in the race in the 19th CD, right?
Right. Congressional
district. And there we're seeing Gibson, right? Gibson, as opposed to Gibson. He's down in the Senate somewhere else. Gibson, who is extraordinarily popular, contested by a very aggressive newcomer,
Sean Eldridge,
who is investing a lot of money into this campaign, but out and who came on yesterday and said, well, you know, the only good poll is the, you know, the same thing they always say, the only good poll is Election Day. But then came on and said, I've cut his lead in half. My polling is showing. Out comes the Siena poll this morning and shows that Gibson is leading by 23 points, which I happen to know. Don't ask me how, is what the internal polls have been showing all along.
So was the original lead 46%?
No.
46 points?
That's a very good point.
It's always been 23.
That's a very clever.
It's always been that.
No, that's right. So I think at one point the internals were showing 26 right. or 27, and here's 23. Now, here's a Republican. There are a lot of people in his district who love him but don't love the Republican position,
right.
but still are willing to vote for him because they like him.
But, you know, what's come to the fore in this race, and I think Gibson is going to win. What's interesting to me in this is that he came to the Pride Center gala, the LGBT Pride Center in Albany. He came to the gala. He says he's pro-choice. My hope here is, okay, now he's getting reelected for the first time, right? Because he was just elected. He's been in for one term. Mm-hmm. That he will show some leadership on these issues within the Republican
caucus. Well, he's going to still vote for Boehner. That's the point.
Well, but that's the problem. Yeah. That's the problem. I don't want someone coming to the Pride Center gala to give me lip service and then go back and vote against the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. I don't want somebody who's going to tell the women's community I'm pro-choice and then vote against women's right to choose in reproductive health care. So I get where Sean Eldredge is coming from in terms of his messaging. What we need to do is
That's
hold...
the Democrat, yeah.
Right. What we need to do is hold Gibson's feet to the fire. He's a very nice man.
Oh,
I met him
boy.
The other night.
Everybody
he's a
loves
match.
Him.
He's
Everybody
a nice
loves
guy.
Him. I love
right.
him. But I,
know,
but I want you to know...
But the politics really does have an impact on people's lives.
But I want you to know that that his service ability is... NPR had a story yesterday.
Constituency service?
Yeah, constituency service.
Yeah.
This guy breaks his bones to help people. And that,
That's
according to NPR
elected.
Yesterday, is what it's all about.
Right. Right, that is what it's all about.
You
There's
know,
no two ways about it.
The poll was mentioning that people are enthusiastic about voting. 36% of Republicans,
yeah.
26% of Democrats. Hey, I'm happy that anybody's enthusiastic about voting because
sure.
Turnout is very important. Mm-hmm. We all fight for this right to elect people, and it's very especially in an off year like this, people probably should get out and vote and make a point of it.
Which leads to this whole thing about there are people out there who are trying to make it as hard as possible to vote. I heard a wonderful story from a BBC reporter who went down to North Carolina. I think they played it at 3 a.m. this morning as I was driving in. And she goes down to this district. And the Republicans are saying the sanctity of the vote is so important. Well, but we can't have people,
Except
we can't have this
black.
Massive fraud, right?
Right.
Then they say, we can't have this massive fraud. I say, can you give us some examples of fraud? No.
Right.
No.
This is another narrative that they've made up and people think it's true.
And we're going to take the early voting booth off the University of North Carolina campus because we know that there are more Democrats than Republicans sitting there. That's disgusting.
That's voter fraud. That's the voter fraud that's happening, is what the Republicans are doing.
All right. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. That was Libby Post. Judy Patrick is here. Alan Shartok is here. Ray Graff, roundtable@wamc.org. In the minute or so we have remaining,
yeah,
you may read one letter, and then I need predictions from you.
Okay. Okay. Very quickly, we heard, I agree with Libby. Thank you, Libby, for questioning the polling process.
Okay.
And then I'm not reading the rest of
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, keep them short. That's the best plan. All right, tonight is the first Game 7 in some time the World Series.
Oh, boy.
This
mm-hmm.
is a big deal for mm-hmm. baseball, for middle America, for small ball, for so many reasons.
For all of us.
The Kansas City Royals.
Boo.
What? And the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah.
San Francisco has won a couple of World Series already. Face off tonight in Game 7. Last night, if you missed it, the Royals facing elimination at home.
It was really.
Did you see it?
It was just
10-0.
Unbelievable. I watched the second inning.
Okay. Well, tonight is the night. If the Royals win, it's the first time since.
And where's the game?
In KC.
In Kansas City.
That's bad.
It's the first time since 1985. The Royals, a very small market team in a league that is ruled by the huge markets.
Who's pitching for the Giants tonight?
Tonight for the
Is it the guy that can't hit?
No, but who is it? Tim Hudson, who is about a 39-year-old pitcher who can pitch well. We'll see.
There's some guy that Kansas City can't hit.
Baumgartner. Now, I imagine if Hudson doesn't make it,
he'll go in.
Yeah. Now, I need predictions. Tonight, Libby.
I think the Giants are going to pull it out. I want San Francisco to win.
All right.
Royals, but let the game end early so I can make my print deadline.
Alan?
Giants, without question. San Francisco is
it's
a great
fabulous
city.
And
I always go on. I could never vote for a Dallas team because you know what happened in
Dallas.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Well, guess what? The KC Royals will win tonight. It'll be a storybook ending, and Judy and I are correct. Alan and Libby are incorrect. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Hour number two on the way.